is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, here we are in May 2020, just about ready to turn into another month of June, halfway through the year, and we are a nation struggling to rebound from a pandemic, government-forced lockdown, something we've never seen in certainly our lifetimes. And now you're seeing civil unrest, a center stage as a police officer in Minneapolis now charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter of a nonviolent black man being placed under arrest, handcuffed, and many would say he was presented no danger to the officers on the scene. Of course, this was all captured on video, which is like everything today. It's always captured on video, right? Well, not only did this create riots and a ruckus in Minneapolis and the activation of the National Guard there, but you're also seeing civil disturbances in cities like Los Angeles, in New York City, states like Arizona, Colorado, Kentucky, New Mexico, Ohio, and so many others as this thing catches on. And we've seen this play out before, even though you would not know that. If you listen to the media, you'd think this was a one-time event. Lots to talk about today on Viewpoint, my friends. So we've got that going. We also have the big story and narrative about China and Hong Kong and the terminating of the relationship with the World Health Organization, the president announced, you see, and Michael Johns will be on with us a bit later, and we'll discuss all of that. Also, as we do a deeper dive into this unrest in America's cities and what exactly is behind the violence, and then you see the war on Twitter as well. This is another huge thing that the president has taken on, the social media giant here. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Blue Lives Radio, will be on with us after. Ron Edwards, Dennis Santiago, full lineup, great program here. Let's get started, friends, and talk about Minneapolis burns. And I want to talk in a bigger conversation of what's happening to America's cities. And we'll do that at the start of the program here with Dr. James Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell has a PhD in clinical psychology and served 22 years in the U.S. Air Force, retired as a lieutenant colonel. You know him probably best because he was involved in the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation program. You know, he's noted that historically for interrogating 14 of the most senior high-value detainees in U.S. custody. The book you probably have read, Enhanced Interrogation. So the media said the rioting was understandable, Dr. Mitchell, and they said it was justified by the fact that the police officer was not arrested and charged for the crimes until 72 hours had passed. How can destroying the homes and businesses in their own neighborhoods be justified, and how does that fix the problem? What do you think's behind all this?
Well, I don't think it is justified. I mean, the event itself, the initiating event or the inciting event where the officer appears to be culpable, and at least it's to some extent in the killing of that unarmed black man who was completely under their control. The anger about that is, I think, justifiable. I'm angry about it myself. You know, I've spent a lot of time working with law enforcement, and I think that behavior is reprehensible and shouldn't have happened. But that doesn't give you moral justification to destroy your neighborhood. You know, there's one of the things that I don't like about what the press has been doing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, though, is they do present this notion that there was a moral justification for acting out in ways that are more akin to what you see with domestic terrorism than what you would see for, you know, a legitimate protest about the mistreatment of a black man who was killed by the police. Apparently, the thing that it makes it easier for them to act out, because the way that it's presented in the press not only gives them a moral justification, but that also does this advantageous comparison. The man died and all they're doing is burning a few cars, and euphemistically labeling what they are doing as legitimate protests instead of burning, rioting, pillaging, destroying the hard-earned work that other people have done.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And we're seeing, I mean, a lot of this is just crimes right in the right in the open. I mean, they're not hiding it, obviously. I mean, this is where there's nothing peaceful about what's happening right now. Well, I've received a message in. Listen to this here now. And it said here, let me read this to you. I watched a reporter ask, what did he want for an outcome? Justice was the answer. So this was an interaction between some of the protesters or rioters, if you will, and the press. Okay. Justice was the answer. Then he asked what kind and how did burning local businesses who weren't involved help? And he had no answer. He started ranting. The guy did. Well, the reporter tried to ask another question. The same actor goes circular and says, then why are we looting? Again, the reference point was here. He had no script. He wasn't fast enough on his feet with quick responses. And then this person who has seen all this said, that's when I realized for the last several days, the professional agitators are the ones they interview, meaning what you just said, the media is in cahoots. And now some of this stuff looks quite orchestrated. I'm seeing a lot of reports of Antifa. George Soros' name comes up a lot with these kinds of things, and a lot of recent reports in the last day. So paid actors come up. What do you think about those reports of paid actors and Soros, Antifa? How do those or do they play into an incident like this?
Oh, of course they do. You know, what we know about mobs is that there's a diffusion of responsibility and there's a displacement of responsibility, which gives people a lot of anonymity. And what happens when you bring in these outside agitators is they'll take what's normally a peaceful protest or even a rowdy protest where they're screaming at the police or whatever, and they will deliberately burn cars or they will deliberately break open windows and ransack stores, and that works up the mob. And so from my view, as I said before, it's more like domestic terrorism, because what you have is you have a legitimate inciting incident that should result in protest. But when the community is agitated and worked up like that, these outside agitators come in and actually seed a riot that ends up destroying property. And in my view, they should be treated as domestic terrorists. Homeland Security should identify who's funding them. They should identify who's bringing them in. And they need to reestablish control. They can't let this thing just keep spinning, because the agitators are going to use social media and the dark web to coordinate their activities. And it'll just get worse and worse and worse. A lot of the places where these abuses apparently take place have been under Democratic control, control of the Democrat Party, for decades. And what they do is they leverage fear and hope to harvest votes, but they never really deliver. And so when an incident like this happens, there tends to be this urge to protest because people haven't followed through on their promises. And it's probably particularly bad since there's been this huge drop in employment from the highest numbers ever in the Black community to where there are millions of Blacks now out of work, primarily because the blue state Democrats do not want to reopen and have people work because they don't want the economy to improve. And all of these things kind of converge, and it sets up a tinderbox that's actually set off by these outside agitators that are brought in.
There are two narratives in the country that are happening, Jim, as we talk about blue state, red state, and the reopening of the country. Blue states, as you just said, are more want to be more shy, and they want to hold back. They don't want people working. They think government's going to fix it all. The red states, that's a different narrative. They want to open and get moving again, the country. So it has become very political. When you look at our history and you look at all of the states that are in play right now in the cities, this has become a tinderbox right now. I mean, this is a political storm that is brewing. Now, we've seen these before. We've seen them in the 60s. I mean, these are not totally new to America, even though most people won't admit it, Jim. I mean, we've had a history. Remember back in 67, 68, 69, there's some major unrest and rioting and what have you. I mean, so for those who think this is all new to our country, it really isn't new. They've been trying to do this and hustle down American cities for decades now, Jim. Is this the time they're going to be successful, do you think? Or does this thing begin to settle down, I wonder?
Oh, I have great faith in the American people. I don't think that they're going to be successful at this. Hmm. But I would hope that what they would do is realize that what happens in a lot of these states that have been controlled by the Democrats, especially the cities that have been controlled by Democrats for decades, is that they create this kind of unrest and then claim that they're the solution for the crisis that they created. And the problem with that, of course, that is the real systemic racism. It's in the Democrat Party. And, you know, you will think back, not to drift too far, but think back historically, they opposed the Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah. They wanted to end the Civil War early and re-enslave all of the blacks who had been fighting for the Union. George Wallace was a Democrat. The Ku Klux Klan was Democrats. You know, Byrd, who was Hillary Clinton's mentor in the Senate, was the grand cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan. And when you look at the number of white supremacists who have been in Congress, the vast majority of them, not all of them, but the vast majority of them have all been Democrats. And so I think there is systemic racism that produces these problems. But it's not with white America. It's with the Democrat Party, because they believe that they need to have people dependent on them, looking to them for handouts so that they can harvest their votes.
Why is that lost on most people, or is it? And I wonder this all the time. I mean, what you just say right now is, I wish every American could really take that in. That's exactly what's happened, is the truth behind it. It's projectionism at its very, very best. And they're brilliant at it on the far left. But why are they not onto all of this, Jim? What's the holdback on this? I mean, why don't people understand this?
Well, I think that the leaders in the Democrat Party do understand it. I think that they understand the psychological mechanism. You know, because they're the ones who are telling the blacks that they have no opportunity. They're the ones that are telling them that they're not skilled, that they're not bright enough. They're the ones who opposed integration.
Yeah, but is black America catching on to this thing yet, Jim? That's what I'm asking. The people on the street, are they catching on to this yet?
Some are. And you see a movement among blacks who are supporting Trump. But remember that what the Democrat leaders are trying to do in these cities is walk a fine line. They want to leverage fear and hope. They want the blacks to fear voting for the Republicans more than they fear the current masters that they have, and to hope that if they continue to support the Democrats, that their life will get better. And it won't get better. It hasn't gotten better in decades and decades and decades, and it won't get better until they realize that men like Martin Luther King, who were Republicans, and the people who pushed for the kinds of changes in integration and acceptance in the community were free market conservatives and Republicans, not the Democrats who keep leading them down the wrong road.
Isn't it interesting that it takes this sort of a narrative or story to push COVID-19 off the front page, Jim? I mean, we haven't been able to move that story off of anywhere, as we've been in a standstill. And now this is the story that has taken over, because the media can really only really push one story at a time, so they can just keep beating that drumbeat constant, you know, to the people. Why do you think the media is so induced with this narrative? Why are they in cahoots with these kinds of actors and the people we're talking about and the evil that we're discussing? What is behind all that, do you think, the media? People are aghast at how unfair and unjust they are.
I think they really believe what they say. You know, if you imagine a situation where you actually believe that Trump was a Nazi, or you actually believe that that the Conservative Party were fascists, you could see how people would get out on the street and do that. And those beliefs, and it's more now about beliefs than it is about facts. I mean, if you look at the facts, more white people are shot to death by police officers than black people, you know, and in fact, oddly enough, almost as many Hispanics are shot to death. And if you look at the shifts in the number of shooting deaths that have occurred over the last 3 years or 4 years, what you'll see is that they've been decreasing every year, and they're way down this year. 42 white folks, according to one source, and 31 black folks have been have been shot to death by police. And in a lot of cases, but it's not about facts. It's about beliefs. And the people who want to promote a progressive view and want to create so much crisis in America that they can shift the values and then refreeze them after they've taken advantage of the chaos that they've created, those people have one drum that they beat, and that is that it's open season on black men, when in fact it's open season on just about anyone that the bad police officers scope home in on. And let me give you a point that I would make about that. You know, there are close to 700,000 police officers. 700,000 police officers. And, you know, most things in human nature is distributed on a bell-shaped curve. And so if what you do is you think that there's 2.5% of those who are bad apples, that's 17,000 bad apples in the law enforcement agencies in this country. Yeah. We don't have nearly that many people acting out, which suggests that those agencies do a relatively good job of identifying them and taking care of the problem. This particular officer who was involved in the death there in Minneapolis had 18 complaints filed against him. He should have been relieved of duty long ago. This is not an excuse for that man. He did a horrific thing. Even if that wasn't the proximate cause of this person's death, he never should have been kneeling on his carotid artery, you know, because there are some people who just look for ways to increase the discomfort and pain as a way of inflicting, feeling better about themselves, feeling more powerful. Yeah. There's about 2% of those in the police department, because that's the way natural statistics fall out. And that's 17,000 people. We don't see nearly that many people acting out.
That's an excellent point. And how does this play out?
Well, it could go either way. I can tell you how it should play out. Okay. How it should play out is that they reestablish control. You know, they need to, and the press needs to participate in this, but certainly the political leaders need to undermine the moral justification and those advantageous comparisons that they've been making. They need to graphically spell out the consequences of the rioting and the looting on the individuals who live in those communities, because they're the ones who are going to suffer. And they need to be sure that they specifically identify the people who are responsible for this. They have to undercut that displacement of responsibility that happens in mobs. They have to undercut that diffusion of responsibility that happens in mobs, and be sure that the people who break windows, set fires, attack other people, accost women, that those people are individually named and individually targeted by the law enforcement system to receive the punishment that they deserve. And they have to put a human face on the real victims of this. The real victims of this is the black community. They're the ones who are going to be taken advantage of by the people who want to use this to their advantage. And so I think that what they have to do is they have to realize that the reason that they're living in the kind of crappy places they live is because of the political choices that they've made to support those people who want to keep them in that kind of servitude so that they can harvest their votes.
Yeah, that right there is the soundbite, what Dr. Mitchell says right there. That's the soundbite that has to get out there. That is exactly it. And until those people realize that, this circular environment is going to continue on, as we've seen now historically. You know, I always wonder, will we ever learn lessons in this nation? Well, not when the same actors are at the top manipulating the people and the data, as we're seeing right here. This is where the rubber meets the road, what Dr. Mitchell is discussing right there. And up next year, I want to talk about China, Hong Kong, the president coming out and talking about all of that, and the World Health Organization as well. That's going to be a whole new direction there as we cut ties with them. Of course, all of that was what happened with this pandemic coming out of China. But there's a big story here now is China comes front and center here. We've been predicting this for a long time, and here we are, people. We'll talk about more of that in just a moment as Viewpoint continues.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Well, up next, what to do about China. Well, President Trump says this, China's pattern of misconduct is well known. For decades, they have ripped off the United States like no one has ever done before. Raided our factories, offshored our jobs, gutted our industries, stole our intellectual property, and violated their commitments under the World Trade Organization. Joining me now here is Michael Johns. Michael is the national co-founder, leader of the Tea Party movement, a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. So last week, the demonstrations resumed in Hong Kong itself here. You know, everything's been sort of quiet with the pandemic there for the most part. Now, a spokesman for the Hong Kong's legislature, the National People's Congress, okay, which is, most people would say, essentially a puppet of communist China, as they have made inroads there pretty aggressively. We're taking over Hong Kong. They announced a bill that was being drafted to establish and improve the legal system and enforcement mechanism for safeguarding the national security in the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, they call it. This bill was passed into law on May 28th, and it's called the National Security Law. Now, this is a game changer. And what this does, it allows the central government to set up relevant national security bases in Hong Kong. And now their military force can now have a legal presence in Hong Kong. And China's state-run media comes out and says this law will end the existing one country, two systems framework, which will no longer be supported by the Chinese government. Any surprise here to you, Michael? What do you see?
Well, I do think it's a tad bit surprising how aggressively the Communist Party of China has moved on Hong Kong. And I think they've clearly used the distraction of the world's focus on the coronavirus pandemic as a basis to do that. You know, I'd remembered a quote by Mao Zedong when during the Cultural Revolution, who had said, "Everything under heaven is in utter chaos. The situation is excellent," which is sort of an ideological basis for how not just communist China has operated, but how communist regimes around the world have acted. They very, very frequently have used global distractions as a basis to be aggressive and to advance their interests when the rest of the world is not looking. That's happened in Hong Kong. And as a product of this, yes, Hong Kong's no longer an autonomous region as it had been set out to be in the 1997 transfer of power under the Sino-British Joint Declaration. So it's a treaty violation by communist China, and there need to be and will be ramifications for it.
Yeah, that's it. Margaret Thatcher signed that back in 97. Talk about a different era and moment of time there. But a lot of folks, when that was signed, kind of figured that China would never follow through with the 50 years, quite frankly, Michael, because they have no history of ever honoring their agreements. I mean, historically, they've never honored anything, it seems. So I remember when that happened, I wasn't too optimistic myself that they would do this. So what you just said now, they're taking advantage of the pandemic. So what's happening is there's a distraction in play right now. And they're absolutely, and a distraction that they caused, by the way, and they are using it for great means to further their agenda. So everything we've been talking about over the past 10, at least 10, 20 years now about China seems to be coming true. You look at what's happened in the South China Sea. You see what's happened with all the trade deals. You see what's happening now with this pandemic business, now with Hong Kong, Taiwan. We've been predicting that China's going to be the big problem ahead, far more than anything else on the in the world. And it seems to be that is coming true right now. How are we going to deal with China in the future now? You see, President Trump is in a very precarious place. I mean, he has called Xi Jinping his friend right along, but doesn't look like he's a friend right now, does it?
You know, Kennedy called Khrushchev a friend. Reagan called Gorbachev a friend. What does that really mean? It's state talk for the fact that we have open communication and dialogue. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that
they're going off for a beer, right?
It has not. Yeah. Well, that can happen too. But I think ultimately you're dealing with the reality mm-hmm. of a regime of which Xi Jinping is just the, he is the head. He is a very strong head. He is president for life of China. He's an ideologue. He's aggressive. He's sophisticated. He's smart. I don't underestimate this regime, and nor should anyone. They are immensely strategic, and I have great praise for him. I think the way the president described it during the 2016 campaign is exactly right. They've been more cunning than our leaders. And I'll just, kind of react to one thing you had said about this developing as we had anticipated. I think when you say we, I think you mean most thinking Americans who have looked at communist China. But when you talk about the kind of governing class of Sinologists, sort of starting with statecraft leaders like Henry Kissinger onward, they are the ones who told us that China would ultimately not emerge as any degree of threat, and that as the Chinese economy grew, which it obviously has grown in astronomical ways to be the second largest economy in the world, that it would become less threatening to the world, that it would become more respectful of human rights. Hmm. It would assimilate into, maybe it would never be part of any Western alliance, but it at least would be peaceful with Western democracies. And of course, the exact opposite has been the case. I think the American people need to recognize that the so-called experts on this issue had it 100% wrong.
Yeah, you are so spot on. Listen to what Michael says there, people. He is so spot on. I mean, really, this has been a failure of our political leaders here, is what's being said, over many, many years. And Michael, that really is the problem. I mean, this goes back through many, many administrations. And we all seen this well before the Trump administration. In fact, President Trump is really the first leader here, political leader we've had in our nation, to take the stand and call out big bad China as he has. And he has played it as an art, more or less. But I got to tell you, I don't know if there's a chapter, a second book or a chapter two to The Art of a Deal, but he's going to need a few magic tricks at this point because things are heating up pretty well. Let's go through a couple of deep dives here on some things the president says, Michael, and get your response here. The president says, therefore, I am directing my administration to begin the process of eliminating policy exemptions that give Hong Kong different and special treatment. He said, my announcement today will affect the full range of agreements we have with Hong Kong, from our extradition treaty to our export controls on dual-use technologies and more, with few exceptions. And he gets into a few things here, which, of course, Hong Kong responded, which is the puppets in Hong Kong. When I say Hong Kong, it's not the people of Hong Kong. They came out, Michael, and said, any sanctions are a double-edged sword that will not only harm the interest of Hong Kong, but also, significantly, those of the United States. Of course, and this again is, keep in mind, people, Hong Kong's pro-Beijing government, which is the ones who's saying this. What do you make of some of the things that he talked about, the fact that we'll be revising the State Department's travel advisory for Hong Kong to reflect the increased danger of surveillance and punishment by the Chinese state security apparatus? How does this play out?
Well, I think the president's 100% right on, both with the timing of the announcement that he's made and also with the content of it. We no longer can recognize the government of Hong Kong as representing the interests and democratic aspirations of the people of Hong Kong. It is an absolute puppet regime controlled by Beijing, and that manifests in a whole bunch of ways, which I could talk about for hours, but just summarize it with the fact that this national security law, which now essentially empowers the government to detain, arrest, disappear, since they don't even necessarily publicly announce their arrests, individuals of opposition under any one of a number of specious allegations is completely uncontrolled, meaning the power of the Communist Party of China to arrest, detain, sentence, even execute individuals within Hong Kong is completely unrestricted. So there is no more really any degree of one country, two systems. It's one country, one system, and that system is communism. And yeah, I have to say, you know, honestly, I did have a very pessimistic viewpoint about the future of Hong Kong. I've been to Hong Kong, and you know, I love Hong Kong. I think it's tragic what's transpiring there. But I think the feeling of the West, the feeling of Margaret Thatcher, at least at that time, was that they didn't have any choice, that, you know, communist China would either invade and occupy the place, or you could cut this deal of 50 years and hope that it was China, not Hong Kong, that ended up changing.
And it's odd how this whole pandemic and the Wuhan China virus has decimated not only the world, but it's changed so much in our relationship with China. And the world's relationship with China is truly astounding. But a lot of this isn't progress, really, but it is the world churning forward. I would venture to say that Hong Kong's best days are not in front of it. And I think it is a sad day for freedom everywhere. But I would venture to say that Hong Kong is just about lost, isn't it?
Well, I think there's a lot of uncontrolled factors here. I'll tell you one thing. In my relationship with the people of Hong Kong, they are incredibly resilient, and they are anti-communists. Now, are you going to be able to impose a communist regime over that city that has a century plus of experience of individual liberty? And it is a very free city. I think there's going to be and continue to be pushback. It's kind of they have the guns, we have the numbers scenario. And what ends up transpiring, and what's intriguing here, is that I think the similarities between communist China and the former Soviet Union are becoming more and more evident, in the sense that, you know, is there really, you know, I want to be clear, we recognize the government of China, we recognize the country of China, so no one disputes that. But is China an authentic or an artificial sort of creation? It, like the former Soviet Union, it's really an amalgamation of individual provinces with their own historical languages and cultures, all held together by force, all secured by force, and in a lot of ways, it's very unnatural. So I think if you looked at Hong Kong, if you looked at Macau, if you looked at Taiwan, if you looked at Tibet, if you looked at East Turkestan, if you looked at South Mongolia, even if you looked at Manchuria and Guangzhou and Shanghai, do these places really have a lot of loyalty to the Communist Party of China and Beijing? Not really. And the only thing that's really keeping that whole country together is, you know, is both force and the threat of force.
Because I think one thing this pandemic has changed and is going to really continue to change is the relationship that China had with us a year ago will not be the way it's going to be a year from now. I mean, it's a wake-up call. I think you would agree with that. A lot of people are really seeing what China is all about right now, right? I mean, and it's going to change a lot here.
Well, they're very ideological and they're very aggressive. Yeah. There is an element of pragmatism in the sense that when they feel that they are strong, they will move aggressively. And when they feel they're in a position of comparative, feel they're in a position of comparative weakness, they will be much more restrained and accommodating.
Yeah, that is well said. Now, you get the problem there of what we're dealing with here. China really has been controlling the World Health Organization for some time. And China, by the way, they pay about $40 million per year to this organization. And guess what the United States pays? How about $450 million? I mean, that's a hell of a disparity, Michael, really, in looking at dollars and cents here. But I think with what the WHO did with the pandemic here, I think that organization has kind of bit the hand who was feeding it, correct?
Well, I mean, yeah, Communist China has a lot of words and verbiage toward international organizations and international cooperation and collaboration, but those are all euphemisms for control. And it's manifested in many of these international, multinational organizations, and it's no better example than the World Health Organization, which literally in the coronavirus pandemic, and we have a government investigation ongoing right now, which I think is going to uncover all of the details and facts about what happened. But you know, let's just be clear, they parroted the Communist Party of China's position that there was no human-to-human transmission of coronavirus into mid-January. They were making those statements when it was abundantly clear in Communist China, and I think it was pretty clear to U.S. intelligence agencies in late 2019 that this had all of the signs of a potential pandemic. So, you know, I've seen, too, the comments from liberals who said, you can't cut off aid to a World Health Organization during a global pandemic. Well, what has the World Health Organization do except facilitate the growth of this pandemic? They have, in many respects, to the extent you want to point fingers anywhere, you got to point them at the government in Beijing and you got to point them at the World Health Organization. That government and that institution have let the entire world down, and this president is correct to realize that we can't have our public health needs served. And interests advanced and be protected through that particular organization at this particular moment. We have to find some other ways to do that.
Excellent analysis from Michael Johns. I always appreciate having him on, and we are on a roll here, folks, for sure. AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
If that wasn't enough for you and not enough excitement on the political circles, let's throw in national riots and protest and from sea to shining sea, as we say here. Minneapolis is the epicenter of the latest. We've seen this play out before in America. It's not a new event, even though the media will have you think this is all brand new and probably say it's Donald Trump's fault. Friends, we've been doing this in this nation for a very long time. Just look back in the 60s and the 70s. They thought the world was ending then as well. So not to say this isn't nothing. It is a problem. Let's talk about it now and what's happening in Minneapolis with this charge with the officer there and George Floyd and the memory of George Floyd and what's taking place here. So, and we'll talk about that, and also I want to talk about the Twitter war and what's happening with the president there. So we'll start here, and I want to bring on Lieutenant Randy Sutton is here. Lieutenant Sutton is a 34-year law enforcement veteran, retired from Las Vegas Police Department. He is the founder of The Wounded Blue. It's a peer support organization for injured and disabled officers and their families. And this is an organization whose time has come. Go to thewoundedblue.org, find out more people, but it is very much needed for law enforcement from coast to coast here. Randy is also the host of Blue Lives Radio here at America Out Loud. He's really a national voice when it comes to law enforcement of any sorts of what's going on here. Randy, I want to take it right back to the epicenter in Minneapolis, if you will. And talk about, all right, so we all see that video there. And it's a pretty horrific video. The president has spoken out about the video. Of course, there's always more to the story you think. But, you know, okay, got it. But still, when you see what you're seeing graphically with that video and the officer's knee on the, I guess the carotid artery is what he was trying to do there, that is a technique, I guess. We'll talk more about that in law enforcement is what I understand. But what went through your mind? As a law enforcement, knowing what's happened, knowing our history since Ferguson of what's happened in this nation, and knowing that the officer was white and the guy on the ground was black, I'm just wondering, what immediately went through your mind when you seen that video, sir?
Well, it was pretty horrifying. My first inclination when I saw it was, oh no, this is not good. Quite honestly, it was not a proper use of force. For the length of time that he did it, you know, here's the deal, Malcolm. When someone is in law enforcement custody, they become our responsibility. He was in custody. He was resistant. But in order to control that resistance, he used the force necessary. This could be very well seen as excessive force. The interesting part here, though, is that everyone, you know, when they see it, they see this, I mean, it's a horrible, horrible optic. And it looks like the officer killed him with that, with his knee on the neck. And I've been counseling to wait before people make judgment as they so often do on watching a videotape, understand that there is an investigation that has to take place. That investigation encompasses things like cause of death, which is probably the most important aspect of this situation. Mm-hmm. And the cause of death was not strangulation. It was not asphyxia.
I seen that. I wondered what was up with that. What do you think?
Well, here's when I first saw and I read the case, mm-hmm. and I read what was going on, my first thought was, okay, this appears to me to be excited delirium. This is, you know, and they only dripped out little pieces of information about, you know, what took place prior to, because you don't see what led up to him being in that position. Now the body worn cameras have that information.
There are other videos. That are being played out there.
Correct. And I have a copy of the affidavit that was used, the affidavit of probable cause to make the arrest on the one officer. And I've reviewed it. Mm-hmm. And there's much reference to what took place prior to what we see where the Mr. Lloyd is down on the ground and the officers are holding him down.
Right.
There was a lot of resistance.
But why he had his knee there? I didn't see the guy on the ground resistant at all at that point. I mean, No.
The resistance took place before that.
Well, why did he leave his knee so long on his face there?
That's the mystery. And that's when I say that I believe this was an improper use of force.
Yes.
That's what I'm referring
absolutely,
to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I would have certainly been shocked if you had said otherwise. But let me ask you this. If he didn't die of asphyxiation and you know, as we are now supposedly understanding, do they know what he died of at this point?
I will actually read to you from the affidavit probable cause.
What does it say?
And it will, let me pull it up here. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner conducted Mr. Floyd's autopsy on May 26, 2020. The full report of the ME is pending, but the ME has made the following preliminary findings. The autopsy revealed no physical findings that support a diagnosis of traumatic asphyxia or strangulation. Mr. Floyd had underlying health conditions, including coronary artery disease and hypertensive heart disease. The combined effects of Mr. Floyd being restrained by the police, the underlying health conditions, and any potential intoxicants in the system likely contributed to his death. What apparently killed this victim here is all the underlying conditions and the stress, the physical stress of the fighting that took place prior to him being restrained.
Got it. How do you convince a public? How do you change a narrative when trust is lost with this ongoing war with the, again, the war on cops versus what's going on the streets here? Let me say one other caveat here I want to put out there, Randy, so all listeners know here. And I received a reporting on this to the network here. It says this. I think it's important to suggest this. According to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, kneeling on a suspect's neck is allowed under the department's use of force policy for officers who have received training in how to compress a neck without applying direct pressure to the airway. It is considered a non-deadly force option, according to the department's policy handbook. Now, that I received that in, Randy. That is an eye-opening statement right there.
Yes.
However, how do you convince a public that, you know, everything was on the up and up when you see the video and the guy is fighting for his life? I mean, listen, I got to tell you the truth here. That guy could have died of a loose hangnail on his finger and nobody would believe you. I mean, the point is, or he could have died of, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter what
yes.
it is.
Yes.
The visuals told another damn story. So I don't think we can fix this, can we?
You're absolutely right. And I was, you know, I was on several mainstream media outlets. Each of the questions always centered around, well, is this another Michael Brown Ferguson killing of an unarmed man?
Right.
And that infuriates me because, of course, the Michael Brown case is entirely different.
Hands
Michael
up, don't shoot, right?
But exactly. But you see, here's the issue. We are being looked at through the lens of media lies. It's a tragedy. This death, it truly is a tragedy. So politicians and celebrities, they're out there claiming that this is a cry for justice. Well, I'm sorry, but looting and burning and rioting is not a call for justice.
Well, you're spot on, and I know your feelings on that. We've been talking about that earlier in the program as well. But all right, stay right there. Let me bring on now Ron Edwards here, and Ron is a columnist, and his voice, the Edwards Notebook, you'll catch right here at America Out Loud. And Ron is a Black American conservative. Love to get his opinion on these kinds of things because he can speak. In fact, he's got a brilliant read up on the platform I want to tell you about right now. Racist, racist, racist. Let's destroy Minneapolis. It's quite the read, actually. And it's on AmericaOutLoud.com. And I love the piece because you make us think, Ron, in that article, that op-ed you have on there. Now, you hear where Lieutenant Randy Sutton and I just gone with this thing. And we'll get into the unrest flowing through America's cities in a moment. Taking into consideration the knee, the cause of death, what had happened, the video we've seen, what we're now discovering with this, how does that change the narrative or not, Ron Edwards, in the country now? What do we do?
Well, first of all, I want to preface my upcoming comments by saying that knuckle-dragging, burning of cities across this great nation and all the harm to the private businesses and even the state capitol building in Columbus, Ohio, et cetera, is evil and wrong, Soros funded, and the whole nine yards. There was some way that the police could arrest them all. That being said, think that when you see a man that is subdued, his hands are tied behind his back, so there's not much he can do unless he's Bruce Lee or something. But I just don't understand how 1, 2, 3, I think 4 officers did not have the mental wherewithal between the 4 of them, how they could not have gotten that gentleman whose hands were tied behind his back into the squad car and taken him off to jail and for the $20 crime or alleged crime. So I just think that there's a disconnect there in the interpretation of police policies, because that move, we were taught that in martial arts and in many police departments around the country, I guess Minneapolis is excluded. That move has been dropped for many police departments because it can be dangerous. You put a crush on the back of a neck and you can do some real damage.
We know that he didn't die of the asphyxiation and the knee, supposedly. Now, I don't think a lot of people out on the streets are going to believe anything that's being said right now, quite frankly. So now you've got this unrest that's happening through our cities.
how do we get control back, Ron? What's, I mean, right now we've got a narrative out there that law enforcement is out of control, that this guy put the knee on and killed this guy, even though it's not the case right now, but it doesn't matter. How do we get control back?
Well, first of all, we have to do what the Hungarian prime minister had the nerve, the cojones to do. We've got to round up the Antifa activists that are all throughout this situation. Give you an example, Malcolm and company. There was a pile of bricks that were neatly stacked ahead of time of the demonstration that started here in Detroit. We get a call, and we also see the report on TV. There's a big pile of neatly stacked bricks by the Antifa folks. So when they all show up, they have this pile to throw at businesses. Wow. This is being used. Even if the situation was as bad as they think it was, it is no excuse to try to destroy the entire republic. This is just a bunch of barbarians trying to destroy our republic. This is an orchestrated situation.
Stay right there, Ron. I want to bring on now Dennis Santiago. Dennis is a strategist here at America Out Loud. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Right now, we could use stability in Minneapolis, Dennis, and a lot of other cities, obviously, from coast to coast. Here's what I want to ask you. How do we put the genie back in the bottle? We have unrest now in the cities from coast to coast. This thing is uprising. Now, one or two things are going to happen here. And it was mentioned earlier in the show from Dr. Mitchell, it will either be a tipping point that will throw us into total chaos, and anything is possible at this point. I mean, people are pretty pent up with the pandemic and all this bad news everywhere, and jobs are no longer to be found. In fact, Black America has been decimated because of this pandemic, as well as all of us have. Every America has, every version of America. How do we now put the genie back in the bottle? They're not going to believe any new narrative that's thrown out there. The unrest is there, paid or unpaid, and people are out of control, and the governors and mayors are not taking control of the situation. What do we do?
We do the same thing that we did the last time there was actually a real spontaneous event of this sort, which was 1992 in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Back then, what happened was the people took back control through two means. They essentially created martial law for about a week and a half, by bringing in the National Guard, which is possible to do. You know, that basically calms the situation. But before those people showed up, the people started taking control back. We all got our guns. And basically, anybody came around trying to loot, we pointed at them. And some of us shot at them. That was the 92 riots in Los Angeles. What you're not seeing this time, and you haven't seen it since Ferguson, is that people just sit back and watch. All right. You got to get active. The people that I think are the big heroes in Minneapolis right now are the other Black business owners that basically started standing in front of their shops, just like people did in Los Angeles in 92, and you know, with their guns out front and basically said, you come here, you're going to die. And that's kind of what it takes to quell a riot, particularly when you've got people that are clearly very organized. This is not a spontaneous response to an event. This is a group of people that have been waiting since Ferguson for a bad optic event to occur that they could capitalize on, and they activated all of their resources.
Okay. You just said the key thing, a bad optic event. Randy, let's bring a full circle now, because it is a bad optic event, which we have clearly proven on the program here. How do you think we put the genie back in the bottle here and get through this chapter?
I don't think we can put the genie back in the bottle. This is too significant an uprising. I believe that there is a control factor, that this isn't by accident, that there is some coordination taking place in different cities. Antifa, I do believe, is very much alive and well in this. Portland is their base, and Portland is on fire. The idiotic mayor up there, Ted Wheeler, has brought this on the people of Portland by his past response and allowing Antifa to basically run the city when they want to commit acts of violence. And now suddenly he's in full panic mode because they have literally, you know, they set the city on fire. We have precincts in New York being besieged. We see in Minneapolis the mayor ordering the surrender of the police station, Precinct 3, to the rioters who then burned it to the ground.
You think this thing has to run its course now?
Well, what needs to happen is the police and the National Guard now, because the National Guard's involved. In fact, for the first time in history, the full National Guard has been activated in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Now, this didn't have to happen. It happened because of the inept leadership. The mayor over there, Fry, is anti-law enforcement, has not given the resources. He has purposefully taken resources away from a severely understaffed police department over the last several years that he has been in power. He's had an anti-law enforcement agenda. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. But who's paying the price? It's the people.
We will see what transpires, but I think we're at a real fascinating tipping point. Does anybody believe that this will have a positive outcome? I mean, only if you believe it has a positive outcome, speak. Otherwise, don't.
In the long run, I do.
All right. Fair enough. Dennis, what do you say?
I also believe there will be a positive outcome for this. At this point, you're exposing the forces of the people that are trying to capitalize on this. And at a certain point, people are going to figure that out.
So you think people will figure this out, Dennis? You believe that? Really?
Yeah.
You do? All right. I don't know.
Americans aren't that dumb.
If Little Hungary could stop Soros from coming into its country and other leaders, America should be able to do the same via Trump and a few other people that have common sense in this government and stop this money funneling into different factions that are destroying our cities right now. Just stop it.
President Trump, in one of his tweets, said, "These thugs are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen." Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz and told him that the military is with him all the way. Any difficulty, and we will assume control. But when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Thank you. Now, that was the tweet that Twitter censored. The second one, which caught everybody's eyebrows upward, Dennis, as to what was going on. And there's a war brewing with social media, Twitter specifically at this moment, and the president. Was that tweet appropriate, first of all? Should Twitter have blocked it, second of all? And they said it glorified violence here. What do you say?
Seeing as I pretty much just said the same thing on your program, I would say I think it was a very appropriate observation by the president to do that. Yeah, I mean, you know, and as Ron just said, that certain things are inconvenient to hear, but you got to hear the truth. So I don't think Twitter should have gotten in the middle of it. Plus, Twitter just committed industrial suicide by exposing themselves to and crossing over from the platform protections that they had into the publisher world, where, you know, they are liable for every piece of content that shows up on that.
See, this is what I don't get is this part of the argument right here. I mean, these social media companies want their cake and they want to eat it too. Facebook is the same way. Google and YouTube are the same way. They are absolutely censoring and monetizing and manipulating the content absolutely everywhere. All of these people are doing it all the way across the board. They are becoming publishers, if you will, and as they twist this content to be whatever they want, why don't they just stay out of it? Because they don't want to stay out of it because they have an ideological narrative that is far greater to them than what we're speaking about right now. Big kudos and thank you to Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Dennis Santiago, Ron Edwards. You know, we still believe that in these critical times that we must stand tall here in America. And we also believe that censoring or editing free speech, which is, I tell you all the time, my friends, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. So rest assured at America Out Loud, while we are a family-friendly unit, and you can be proud to be there, we will not censor the conversation or manipulate the voices and the thoughts of Americans who need to get that truth out there. We thank you, as always, for being part of the mission here and the journey here on Viewpoint this Sunday. And it's all back there, friends, at America Out Loud. Get out there and share the truth. It's time to get involved and get loud.